Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It was not a conquering hero speech. More a report, some tough talk, a little mea culpa, and a pep talk from the middle of bruising battle. President Obama's first State of the Union address last night made plain he no longer walks on water. But he doesn't give up either, he said. Americans, he said, don't quit. He called on the legislators before him to match the resilience of their countrymen.
We do not give up. We do not quit. We do not allow fear or division to break our spirit. In this new decade, it's time the American people get a government that matches their decency, that embodies their strength.
This hour on Point, President Obama's first State of the Union address. You can join the conversation. What did you hear in the president's speech last night? Did he speak to you? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Jane Hampshire, founder and publisher of the progressive blog Fire Dog Lake. She supported Obama's election and has become a tough critic from the left. Jane Hampshire, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And with us from McLean, Virginia, is Pat Buchanan, political analyst, columnist, three-time presidential candidate, and co-founder of the American Conservative magazine. He served as senior advisor to Presidents Nixon, Ford, and Reagan. Pat Buchanan, welcome back to the show.
Delighted to be here, Tom.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at The Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Jane, and Pat.
Let's hear a little more from the president talking about how he campaigned on the promise of change.
I campaigned on the promise of change. Change we can believe in, the slogan went. And right now I know there are many Americans who aren't sure if they still believe we can change or that I can deliver. But remember this. I never suggested the change would be easy or that I could do it alone. Democracy in a nation of 300 million people can be noisy and messy and complicated. And when you try to do big things and make big changes, it stirs passions and controversy. That's just how it is.
That's just how it is. The president last night, Pat Buchanan, Jane Hampshire, and Jack Beatty are with us. Jack, first to you. What did you hear in the president's speech?
Well, I heard a very cogent gathering of the president of the felt experience of so many Americans this last year. That is the contrast between a, quote, decent people hurting and a bad political system, a dysfunctional political system. I mean, again and again, he came back to it. The filibuster in the Senate, the every day is an election day, the zero-sum game frame of things in Washington. You lose, one party wins, one party loses, and, of course, the people, where are they? The shot at the Supreme Court, whose decision from last Friday will make everything worse, flooding the system with money. He didn't mention it, but the backroom deals cut by members of his own party to get this healthcare bill to where it out of the Senate. All of these things, I think, speak to the great frustration the people have with a dysfunctional political system. And the tremendous contrast between that and the pain, which I think he spoke poignantly of, that so many Americans are feeling today.
And Pat Buchanan, he said right there at the top, we heard he wants a government that matches Americans' decency, embodies their strength. Was he speaking to you, Pat?
Well, I think the president's problem is this, that in November of this past year and just last week in Massachusetts, or about 10 days ago in Massachusetts, the American people said, in effect, we think we've got too much government, they've got too much power, they're taking over too much, they're not greatly competent, and there have been enormous turnarounds in those three states, all of which Obama carried, turnarounds of 25 to 33 points. And so I think what Obama's problem is this. He is the leader of the party of government that grows and prospers when government expands and programs expand and government workers expand and beneficiaries expand, because these groups, by and large, tend to vote in overwhelming numbers for the Democratic Party. However, he is leading a country which has grown hostile and skeptical toward government and reflected that in these three elections. And this is the dilemma I think Obama is sort of unable to overcome, and you could see him moving one side of it to the other last night.
I can imagine him saying, there you go again, Pat. I mean, he's freezing discretionary spending in a whole lot of government. Does that say something to you, Pat Buchanan?
Well, but see, let me testify to the absurdity of this. He just signed this omnibus spending bill that had 5,000 earmarks in it, and the average increase in federal agencies spending was 10%. That's just a couple of months ago. And all of a sudden, he's a born-again attacker of earmarks. I simply think the president, quite frankly, has lost an enormous amount of his credibility, and he has lost the mystique he had. I think the reason he has been badly mismanaged, I think, and putting him out in front constantly until people are almost tired of seeing him. So I think the president's been damaged.
Jane Hampshire, you've been more and more critical in recent months of this president. What were your responses to his speech last night, Jane?
Well, I think that we heard Barack Obama joins the Tea Parties a little bit. He's very much interested in freezing government spending, extending the middle class tax cuts. He said he was going to issue an executive order to put through the Cat Food Commission, the Greg Conrad Commission, that was going to look at cutting, you know, the budget. He called on Congress to restore PAYGO. But I'm like others have said, I'm not sure he got to the heart of where the mistrust comes from. I look back at the last year when the AIG bonuses were announced, and he said, I'm instructing my Secretary of Treasury, Timothy Geithner, to claw those back. Mm. And that never happened. And over the course of the year, we hear this steady drip, drip, drip of, you know, record profits and billions of dollars in bonuses. And it has caused a breach of trust as others have said, you know, the deals that were cut with pharma and other stakeholders in the healthcare deals. And I don't think he's gotten to that. I don't think that, you know, becoming the latest member of the Tea Parties is going to restore that trust with independents, Republicans, or Democrats.
Jane, I don't entirely get the Tea Party critique. I mean, he was pushing again last night for health care, though it's taken a bruising this year. He was pushing for a new jobs bill and a lot of money on that. I mean, gays in the military. He's freezing spending, but he's not shutting down government. What exactly is the Tea Party connection?
Well, I think that the Tea Party connection is more around fiscal stuff. Gays in the military is not, that's the more of a social issue. And he was appealing to liberals more on social issues. In terms of, creating jobs, he wants to take some of the money out of the TARP. I believe it was $30 billion, for jobs mm-hmm. creation. But I don't know if that's going to, you know, be a big enough number to address the problem that is there right now. We heard about offshore drilling. We heard about nuclear power. You know, there was a lot that that he was using to try and appeal to sort of the mood of the country that is very much in, you know, we don't want to spend right now. But I'm not sure that necessarily achieves the objectives that that the country truly has right now, which is jobs creation.
Tom,
yes, Pat.
I agree with Jane here. The president's got a hellish dilemma. The independents who really were with him in 2008, they said, look, let's take a chance with this fellow. We want to get rid of the Republicans who've done an appalling job. We're nervous about Obama, but we're going to take a chance with him. And they went for him in dramatic margins, and they're the reason why he won that election by 7 points. At the same time, he had this enormous enthusiasm, energy, and fire among young people, African Americans, minorities, gays, and others, that a new day is coming. Now we've seen that independent bloc, which is huge and which, quite frankly, decides elections, moving away, moving hostile, not pro-Republican, but really anti-Democrat, anti-incumbent, anti-Washington, anti-government. And he's trying to put that back together. And that's why there are times he steps out with gays in the military, which is a direct appeal to the gay movement and the young people and others who consider this mm-hmm. a civil right. At the same time, he's talking deficits and talking like a deficit hawk. It's a very tough thing to do. And the question is the division inside his coalition so great now that he really cannot put it together, but he clearly believes the indispensable element he cannot lose is the independents, and that's why you heard I had these tax cuts, those tax cuts, and why aren't you Republicans cheering?
Jack, here we've got Pat unhappy from the right and Jane unhappy from the left. Is there no constituency in the middle for this president, who seemed, to my ear, rhetorically, to be working very hard to find a middle here, a center of gravity?
Well, he certainly was trying to find it, but I agree the polls confirm that he has lost it, that he at least temporarily, and that his party has. Now, Pat talks about that as a serious problem for November in the future, and it is. But another one, and an offsetting one, and one that really intensifies the dilemma of the president, is the problem with his own party. And that is the intensity gap of 15 points between those who, you know, between Republicans. 15% more Republicans say they will vote in November than Democrats. That is poison for his party. He's got to at once bring in the middle and appeal to his base.
But there's a very good point there in this. I've done an analysis or looked at the returns from 2008, and twice as many of Obama's voters were enthusiastic about the idea of an Obama presidency as of McCain voters who were enthusiastic about his presidency, a McCain presidency. And what has happened is, in the Virginia and elections in New Jersey, because we had exit polls there, and certainly in Massachusetts from what we can see, is the enthusiasm, fire, and energy is now Tea Party, town hall, activists, independent folks, alienated folks.
Pat, hold the thought. Let us test that theory right here. Pat Buchanan, Jane Hampshire, Jack Beatty, please stand by. We're talking about the president's big speech last night. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the president's State of the Union address last night, what he said, where he's pointing, what we saw in Barack Obama and his agenda there before the joint session of Congress. Pat Buchanan joins us. Jane Hampshire of FireDogLake.com. Jack Beatty's here. We'll come quickly to your calls, but let's hear a little more from the president talking about the headwind that he's hit in Washington and laying a question before the Congress.
From the day I took office, I've been told that addressing our larger challenges is too ambitious. Such an effort would be too contentious. I've been told that our political system is too gridlocked and that we should just put things on hold for a while. For those who make these claims, I have one simple question. How long should we wait? How long should America put its future on hold?
How long should we wait? So the president, here's a president saying, I won't quit. I still want to do it, but it doesn't look nearly as easy as it might have. Dan, in Charleston, South Carolina. Dan, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I want to say that I saw a picture in the arts section of the New York Times the other day of some North Korean citizens, and they are being led by a terrible man, and they are in terrible circumstances, and there was such hope and pride in their eyes. And this morning I get up and I read the newspaper and I listen to your program and I hear the pundits saying that he didn't do this right and he didn't say that right, and I feel I do feel hopeful. I do feel that he said the things that he needed to say. He said that I didn't do everything perfectly. I made mistakes, and I'm not going to give up. And man, that gives me pride and it gives me hope. And I just wish that we could find a way to come together and think about the country instead of thinking about, I'm on this side and you're on that side, and we have to maintain our side.
Dan, you're talking Barack Obama's tune right there, and I appreciate your call. One more from Harrisonburg, Virginia. Teresa, you're on the air.
Hi. I just want to follow up with that as well. I feel like there's so much toxicity going around in our world and in our communities, and that we needed to hear that not to give up and that we can do this together. And I think it was a beautiful message, and he said everything I wanted to hear.
Teresa, thank you for that. You know, Dan raises North Korea. The president certainly did not talk about them last night, but he did talk about a lot of the rest of the world and about competitors to the United States that he said are not just sitting on their hands.
China's not waiting to revamp its economy. Germany's not waiting. India's not waiting. These nations are, they're not standing still. These nations aren't playing for second place. They're putting more emphasis on math and science. They're rebuilding their infrastructure. They're making serious investments in clean energy because they want those jobs. Well, I do not accept second place for the United States of America.
Jane Hampshire, does that cut no ice with you? The president, you know, saying let's be, I don't know, pragmatic. Let's address our problems and get something done. Does it appeal to something in you, Jane?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it was a, you know, it was a speech where he tried to tap into people's, you know, pride in being Americans and to try and inspire, you know, a confidence that we can work, you know, within our broken system and to encourage Republicans to work alongside him. You know, if you're looking at one of the problems that he's really dealing with right now is Republican obstructionism. When Bill Clinton took office, the filibusters shot up from, you know, dramatically. And once again, when the Democrats took control of Congress, you know, Republicans' filibusters in the Senate jumped from 68 in 2005 to 2006 to 139 in 2007 and 2008. So, you know, he's got a gridlock Senate to deal with. And, you know, he's trying to encourage people to, you know, look at that and say, you know, look, don't blame me. We have things that we need to do, and we need to get past that.
But is there not a pragmatic center, Jane, that you on the left can look to and say, okay, Barack, you may not be able to do everything I want, but we need to get off the dime here. Let's go. Are you part of the gridlock?
Well, I don't have a vote in the Senate, so I probably am not. But if you listen to the hearings that happened yesterday with regard to AIG, both Democrats and Republicans were saying the exact same thing to Timothy Geithner. You know, you've got 98% of the country thinking that the bailout of the banks did something for the banks, but nothing for them. So there's considerable agreement on the part of both Republicans and Democrats on issues like that. And quite frankly, you know, President Obama is backing Ben Bernanke. He's backing Timothy Geithner, Larry Summers, and a lot of really unpopular policies with regards to the banks that he doesn't want to address. So, I think that there is Republican gridlock, but there is also a reluctance to address the things that the American people really do see a problem with.
Pat Buchanan, you say too much government, but the president talked last night about the country not being able to go back to what it did in the first decade of this century. Let's listen just for a second, Pat.
We can't afford another so-called economic expansion like the one from the last decade. What some call the lost decade, where jobs grew more slowly than during any prior expansion, where the income of the average American household declined while the cost of health care and tuition reached record highs, where prosperity was built on a housing bubble and financial speculation.
Pat, you and the Republican response last night both come back and say too much government, but the president was saying, well, we can't do what we just did under George W. Bush.
Well, I agree with him. The decade was, his statistics are exactly right. The real income or median income of average Americans was flatlined through the entire decade, and the assets, savings and home value and the rest of it actually declined about 4% in the decade. But the problem is, for the president making his case last night, is he has, Tom, 60% or had 60% of the United States Senate, 60% of the House, something like a 79-vote margin there. And a veto-proof Senate, and he had the White House, and he had the goodwill of the American people, and he had a full year. And the centerpiece or the altarpiece of his program, the Health Insurance Reform Act, the more people read about it and heard about it and argued about it, the more it declined in public support to where the president's support for health care reform is about at 35%. They failed. And if the Democratic Party, with 60% of both houses, cannot succeed in the prime objective of the President of the United States, they just elected an enormously popular figure, what is the argument for a Democratic Party controlling Washington, D.C.? What argument is left? As for the country, it clearly figures that the Republicans, call them obstructionists, call them what you like, but believes the Republicans were doing the right thing on health care reform in Washington, D.C., and that's why Scott Brown is sitting in the seat of Senator Edward Kennedy.
Jack, I want to get you on that. Let's hear Barack Obama first on health care. Pat raises it last night.
If anyone from either party has a better approach that will bring down premiums, bring down the deficit, cover the uninsured, strengthen Medicare for seniors, and stop insurance company abuses, let me know. Let me know. Let me know. I'm eager to see it. Here's what I ask Congress, though. Don't walk away from reform. Not now. Not when we are so close. Let us find a way to come together and finish the job for the American people. Let's get it done. Let's get it done.
Jack Beatty, Pat Buchanan says the Dems blew it. The president saying last night, let's do it. Let's do it even now. What do you hear in that, Jack?
I think Pat is right that something like the existence or the justification of the Democratic Party is in question. Parties die when they can't address major national issues that they profess to want to address. The Whigs, you know, went out of existence because they couldn't deal with the question of slavery expansion. If the Democratic Party can't gather itself now and pass some version, and I mean a version that does the things the president says, that controls costs, that you know, gets 30 million people insured, that deals with these other problems in the healthcare system, if they can't do that, then their justification for being there, I think, is in question. And, you know, when he said, I will not walk away from these Americans, and neither should the people in this chamber, I think he was talking to those House members and Senate members, Democrats, who are now, because of the, I think, a misreading of the Massachusetts results, quaking before the prospect of passing this bill they've worked on for a year. Now, there are big problems with the bill, but one of them is the president's failure to communicate adequately about it. The Congressional Budget Office says it will save money. Only 15% of Americans believe that. Well, why couldn't that have been made clear to people? Why the failure in public education? Do they or do they not want to get this done? And I think if they don't get it done over the next few weeks or months, this party is seriously in question.
Zach in Framingham, Massachusetts. Zach, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I really just wanted to comment on Mr. Buchanan's comments about his assessment of summarizing the state of health care. This has been a conservative line that I think is just such a vast simplification of it, you know. So yes, you can say that there is 35% approval rating right now for where the health care bill is, but to imply that that is the only thing that has gone on, that, you know, the Democrats, the more they learn about what the Democrats want to do, the more people don't like it, is totally disingenuous. There was strong, and there still is strong, approval in the underlying ideas of reform in America. There was huge approval when he was elected to reform health care. There was huge approval while he was beginning his preparation. And for some reason, the conservatives always want to ignore the fact that there has been one of the most massively expensive and vast obscuring of the issue of what health care is. And, huge amounts of misinformation that is put in. So, you know, amidst death panels and prominent Republicans going out and misinforming people, you know, turning this into an absurd mockery of the system. So much money from the healthcare system is being put into leaning onto Democrats and Republicans. It's not surprising at all that the issue has been obscured and that the approval rating has gone down and that trust has gone down in how much something can be changed.
Yeah, Zach, we've got it loud and clear. Jane Hampshire, what about it? Are you one of the Democrats heading for the hills on the president's health care push? Are you going to be, you know, pushing for it for something or not? And what about Zach saying it's just misinformation? If people really knew, they'd be on board.
Well, he is right about one thing. There is tremendous support for health care reform in the country. We did a bunch of polling recently in swing districts with Survey USA and found that even in these districts, these blue dog districts, people really do want health care reform. The problem is that they have come to mistrust this particular bill. They have heard about the secret deals with pharma. You know, you have Henry Waxman's committee right now trying to find out what those secret deals were. You've got the Cornhusker kickback. That habitat was negotiated with Ben Nelson.
So you're not on board, Jane. You're in the hills already. You're a gorilla in the hills already on this.
No, I think that the House has a very good bill. They have a bill that has a public option, which is still widely popular even in those swing districts among Republicans. And I think that they should start looking to that as a bill that wasn't negotiated with these stakeholders for their benefit, that actually does do things to control costs and is popular with the public. The Senate bill that, they're pushing as the only inevitable bill that we have to have is not a good bill, and people don't trust it, and rightfully so.
And then there's the big jobs push, and can he do that, and health care at the same time. Let's listen to the president calling on Democrats and Republicans to get in here.
To Democrats, I would remind you that we still have the largest majority in decades, and the people expect us to solve problems, not run for the hills. And if the Republican leadership is going to insist that 60 votes in the Senate are required to do any business at all in this town, a supermajority, then the responsibility to govern is now yours as well. Just saying no to everything may be good short-term politics, but it's not leadership. We were sent here to serve our citizens, not our ambitions.
To serve the citizens, not our ambitions, and don't head for the hills. Jim in Montgomery, Alabama. Jim, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'd like to make a comment about something that was previously said by a legislator from Arizona not even an hour ago. He made the comment to calling the president tantamount to a whiner. Something I'd like to remind the American public that a lot of times seems to have a short memory. I think that exactly what the president meant to do when he was mentioning the previous administration was to remind the public how we got into this economic mess in the first place, which was following economic policies of deregulation or ignoring current regulations that were in place for large industries and so forth. And that's how we got into a lot of this economic fix to begin with, the banking laws and so forth. I think that's the only thing. I don't think that the president was attempting to whine about inheriting something from a previous administration. I think what he wants to do is more of a warning to make sure that we don't go down that road again. And something else I would like to mention is I'm a blue-collar worker. I pay $4.50 an hour to dependent coverage insurance for my family. I would appeal to the American to legislatures and to the White House to try to do something about that to help me out, please, because that's a very large portion of my hourly income.
Yeah, that sounds fierce, and we hear it. Jim, thanks for calling Waterloo, Iowa. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I guess there's just one thing I think the Democrats need to get better at doing. I think President Bush did pretty good at doing it was. When Congress being obstructionist like the Republicans are doing, calling them out on it and calling them out on it regularly, and making sure that people are aware that they're actually being obstructionist and sticking to that message and making sure on a daily basis that that the people know that the Republican Party are anti-reform, anti-getting anything done in Washington at this point. And the second point is, I think some people might be looking a little too much into this as far as 2012 goes. I don't think President Obama is really at any risk at this point. And I'd like to see maybe Hillary step out as Secretary of State, maybe run as Vice President.
John, we got our time short before the break. Pat Buchanan, we saw Eric Cantor and John Boehner last night, a lot of kind of mugging when the president would speak. Do the Republicans feel any threat from the don't be obstructionist line from President Obama, Pat?
I think they should feel some, because I think the sense that Washington isn't working, that it's full of cynicism and obstructionism and politics as usual, I think it's a real sentiment of the American people. But there's no doubt about it. That caller a second ago said, the country really wants this health care reform bill, the insurance reform bill, and it's got these wonderful components to it. However, the president of the United States went to Massachusetts, where Martha Coakley supported the public option, and did not even mention health care reform. After Scott Brown's victory, Nancy Pelosi walked out of a Democratic caucus, 100% Democratic, and said, we can't get this through the House.
That's rough. Pat, hold it there if you would. A short break right here. Jane Hampshire, Pat Buchanan, Jack Beatty. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the president's State of the Union address. Here's the president talking about politics and health care reform last night.
I didn't choose to tackle this issue to get some legislative victory under my belt. And by now, it should be fairly obvious that I didn't take on health care because it was good politics. I took on health care because the stories I've heard from Americans with pre-existing conditions whose lives depend on getting coverage. Patients who've been denied coverage. Families, even those with insurance, who are just one illness away from financial ruin.
Barack Obama last night. We've got Pat Buchanan with us. Jane Hampshire is here from FireDogLake.com. Jack Beatty's here. And a lot of response from our listeners here from the website, onpointradio.org. David says, Barack Obama will probably die on the altar of bipartisanship, but he'll be my hero if he does. He said, we treat governance like a consumer product or a sports team. We get the results we deserve. Jack Beatty, you can hear Barack Obama trying to speak to that in this healthcare clip. He's saying, look, you know, it wasn't great politics. I grant you that. But people are out there in pain, and I'm trying to do something here.
That's right. I mean, I think he keeps, to me, he's strongest when he gets to that, to the real experience of Americans. There can't be a more unpopular institution, unless it's Congress, than health insurance companies. I mean, you talk to doctors about it. You talk everybody. Every patient has a complaint. Some justified, some not. But it is simply and we all understand that we, you know, compared to other nations, we spend more and we get back less. Our health in aggregate is worse. And that if we keep going as we are, spending as we are, we're going to break the bank. And I was disappointed, not so much in the president's speech, but in his talk about the budget freeze, is that he sort of walked away from what health care reform was supposed to be about and still is about, which is a genuine, he mentioned it last night, a savings over two decades of a couple of trillion dollars, according to the Congressional Budget Office. Now, that's pretty darned impressive. It's a lot more impressive than a budget freeze on a very small part of the budget. And that's the argument I think he needs to get across, that if we can squeeze the waste out of this system and spread that money over new coverage, we can get a better system and one that gives Americans better health.
Of course, that 20 years is a long time, and we heard on NPR this morning there's a lot of ifs in that Congressional Budget Office equation. Here from Facebook, Adam says, it's time for the president to stop pushing health care and get a real check on what we want, and the only people who will do that, says Adam, is Republicans. Wes says, I thought he was brilliant as usual. It's Congress I want to throw out and start over. John in Chapin, South Carolina. John, you're on the air.
Yes, I've been listening to some of the discussion, and I listened to the president. I'm a longtime independent and voted for people from both parties, and quite honestly, I think the issue right now is one of balance. I think there's an imbalance in Congress. When I hear people talking about the waste and the stimulus package and the amount of money that's involved in the health care, I'm worried about my children. I'm worried about my grandchildren, and I can't wait till the fall election. I'd like to throw a few bodies under the bus.
And it sounds like you're leaning back toward the Republican side of your independent-mindedness, John.
You know, I love to see some of the balance that was there during the Reagan administration when the houses were split. There was some real compromise, and I think that's what we could use right now.
Let's go to thank you, John. Kate in Boston. Kate, you're on the air.
Hi. I was a little bit disappointed last night, and with both parties, actually, because I voted for Obama based on his grassroots campaign and his willingness to listen to people and make things happen. And I also just voted for a Republican senator for the exact same reason.
Scott Brown in Massachusetts, yeah.
Exactly. And when I hear the partisan nature of things and the getting things done without listening to what the people need. Healthcare reform has to happen. I'm a physician. It has to happen. But I think that Obama has lost touch with what the people want out of healthcare reform. And I think if there's a way that people within Congress, in the White House, can work together to make things happen, that's what's got to change.
Kate, I appreciate your call. Jane Hampshire, you see the polls. It's not so good for the president. You hear Jack Beatty's prognostication on the Democratic Party front. Pat, you know, pulling hard for a turn toward the GOP. I mean, you've been very tough critic here. You called mandates in the health care package the road to neo-feudalism. But are you getting nearer or further from your more progressive goals with this disenchantment with the president?
Well, I don't think that you can say that Barack Obama represents the apex of progressive goals, and not being in agreement with him means you're not progressive.
Does he have to be the apex to be president?
Well, I don't think he does. Mm-hmm. I that seemed to be the argument that you.
No, I mean, should he? I mean, I guess that's my question. Should he represent the apex of anything?
Well, I think that the problem we're seeing is not having to do with Barack Obama being progressive or not progressive enough, and nor do I think that there's a tremendous swing of popularity for the Republicans. If you actually look at the polling, the Republicans and Democrats are pretty much dead even in head-to-head generic congressional polls right now. The sort of astonishing thing is that the Republicans are not doing as bad next to Democrats as they were, not that they've pulled ahead or anybody has any faith in them. And Scott Brown was actually running on a sort of rebellion against the Republican Party as well. The whole idea of the Tea Party, you know, Marco Rubio and these guys, is that they're running against the Republican Party. So what we're seeing
But they're in Congress as Republicans. They're in the R column.
But what we're seeing on both sides of progressives such as myself and on the Tea Party activists in the Republican Party is a rebellion against Washington politics represented by both parties. And I do think that since the Democrats are in power, they control, as others have said, Congress and the White House, they're going to take the beating for being the party that is the insider Washington party at the moment. But I don't think you can say that this is because Republicans have become tremendously popular.
Jack, here we've got Jane Hampshire kind of, you know, saying we and the Tea Party people are all against Washington politics. I mean, the president was trying to say last night, so am I. I came here to try and change this. I agree it hasn't worked so well yet. How does this gap remain, Jack? Is he not credible on that front of fixing the broken system?
Well, I mean, he's trying to play the outsider, isn't he? And yet he's the supreme insider. He is the system, and his party is in power, and he's trying to almost sort of triangulate there, it seems to be. I don't know how credible he is as an agent of change, frankly. I mean, I don't think he's been as hard on his own party as the public has wanted him to be, or that he should be. He's let the deals be cut. He's cut some of them himself. There is in Barack Obama at least a part of his, I agree that he's brilliant and lucid and all the rest, but there's a part that's just a Chicago Paul, you know, go along to get along, and he has not pushed those people. He has not really pushed on the earmarks. Yeah, they've made some change, but I mean, by God, he could have vetoed a couple of bills and really made a statement about that kind of spending. He has not pushed on the trial lawyers. I mean, I don't understand why he can't reach across the aisle to the Republicans and say, yes, let's do fundamental tort reform if that's the price of the bill. You know, that's $60 billion a year. Some people think is that 2% of health care costs go to frivolous and, you know, lawsuits. You could still have rights protected, and not, but he hasn't done that. He's played within the Democratic lobby, within the Democratic ranks. So I'm afraid he has not been enough of a change agent for his own party.
Maybe now. We've got a couple of callers for Pat Buchanan here. Chris in West Hartford, Connecticut. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi,
Chris.
Pat, you make a great point. On the surface, that the Democrats shoot, what's the point of having them in there if they've got 60 senators and similar margins in the House and the president, and they can't pass health care reform? I think it's a stronger argument, though, as the president suggests, against the filibuster. The filibuster's history is of upholding slavery and its Jim Crow legacy, and now it's basically allowing the status quo to be blocked by one Joe Lieberman or Ben Nelson, you know, requiring some kind of corrupt bargain or flip-flopping on their principles. The filibuster's got to go. It can't be done in this Senate, I don't think, because once you adopt the rules, you have to have a two-thirds majority to change them. But with the next Senate, I'd like to see a Democratic majority of any size, and I'd like to see them get rid of the filibuster.
Pat Buchanan, what do you say is the filibuster itself and the way it's come to be used that's the problem here?
Well, it used to filibuster even be used to be even more severe. But again, not only did Obama have 60 Democratic senators, there were a number of Republican senators who were willing to work with him. And in the fall, in September, I believe that Harry Reid could have gotten that bill through with the public option, a trigger on the public option, if he'd gone with it and not tried to get the whole public option. I think what these fellas did on the Hill, they grabbed this thing, they took it away from Barack Obama, and they tried to ram through what they wanted, and they fell short here. And now they're coming back and saying, well, maybe we can work with the Republicans. I think there was always a potential, but it's going to be a price. As Jack said, I mean, tort reform is an enormously important thing. Doctors paying $100,000 a year for insurance. They're giving everybody extra tests to cover themselves. You get the trial lawyers making $50 million judgments and juries giving away the store on these things. There's got to be that kind of reform, and they didn't do it. Again, I mean, this is, you can say the Republicans are obstructionists and that, I mean, their arguments were mendacious. But the point is, this is the way politics is done on both sides. There's exaggeration. And the point is that more and more the country came to disbelieve in what they were doing on Capitol Hill.
Bob in Carlisle, Massachusetts, what do you say?
Yes, I'm concerned that Obama has been buying Pat Buchanan's spin. I don't think Americans are really worried about big government nearly as much as they're worried about big corporations. And that shows up in a number of ways. And one other point, I think that Obama's becoming concerned about the deficit now and trying to decrease the deficit, it's just the wrong time for it. We need to invest in the country and in jobs so that we can get the economy going again and then reduce the deficit.
Let me respond to the caller.
Yes, please, Pat. Yeah.
It's not, I mean, Pat Buchanan's spin, Barack Obama and the Democrats aren't paying any attention to me. There are Democrats up there in the House, and there are Democrats in the Senate who see their seats at real risk. And what they're saying is, in their districts of 500,000 people, a congressman, they can't explain this bill to the satisfaction of their own people and survive. That they think it's, the people think it's too much big government, that the people believe this and that, and they went home in August and they were unable to persuade their people it was as good an idea as this caller believes. And they're the ones, their necks are on the line, and they're the ones saying, hold off, we're gone too far, back away, it's too much. Democrats themselves. I mean, not Republican. Republicans can't convince these Democrats that they're in trouble in their districts. They know that for themselves.
President Obama seemed to know it when he said, don't head for the hills, and he was talking to Democrats. He wants them to stick right there, though. Chris in Clarksville, Tennessee, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was just wondering, after last night's speech, if any in Congress were going to have the resolve or the, you know, to actually stand up and go against their party, I guess, and reach across the aisle and get some stuff done instead of worrying about the next election. Thank you.
Chris, thanks for your call. Jack, what about it? I mean, the president, whatever you may think he's a Chicago Paul, but I think a lot of Americans will listen to what he said last night and say, you know, he's right. We can't just keep fighting and twiddling our thumbs here. We have problems. We need to address them, and it's not getting done. It feels like a kind of paralysis. Do you see any chance, or is it just waiting for the elections in the fall to change? When you look at the mood in the hall there last night, Jack, watching the two sides, the kind of body language, what did you see?
Yeah, the two sides, and of course, as the hall hushed and got quieter, the latter part of the speech, you heard the president's hand again and again hitting the lectern. His impatience,
come on,
tattooed there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very difficult in an election year, but you know, already you've got Susan Collins, Republican of Maine, Maria Cantwell, Democrat of Washington State, talking about a joint bill that would throw out cap and trade and put in something, I think, a lot more sensible that would effectively be a limit on carbon emissions with the money saved from charging people who pollute given back to people on their taxes. I think that's a much better idea than cap and trade, and there's a bipartisan approach right there. And I think he could still do something on health care if they really wanted it. As I say, he could do put in serious tort reform and then call the Republicans bluff. You know, they've been saying they want this. Well, okay, here it is. What do you say?
You know, Tom.
Yes, Pat.
Tom, I think that Jack's got a point here. Look, he's the president of the United States. They got 59 votes in the Senate, and they got the 79-vote margin in the House.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to call them down and say, look, you all can't get it through. You've told me that. And what we're going to do now is we're going to take the following ideas these Republicans have given me. I want these rammed into the bill. And I want this done and that done. That's what Lyndon Johnson would have done. He would have said, we didn't get it. Okay, no sense crying over spilt milk. We can get 80% of what we want if we take this 20% Republican ideas. Now do it.
Maybe bang that podium a little bit harder. I have to say, I was struck by his kind of, punking of the Supreme Court sitting right in front of him, or straight-up criticism. And Sam Alito, I think, mouthing, that's not true, when the president criticized the court for bringing in bigger money. We'll see that in the campaign this fall. Jane Hampshire, any chance of the president wooing you back into his corner here, or are you going to be on the, I don't know, across the street from the Tea Party folks, out in the street?
I'm very much in support of the House health care bill, which is much more popular than the Senate bill. If you look at the way that they pay for the House bill with a tax on the wealthy, it's got 65% approval rating, as opposed to the Senate bill that pays for it by having a tax on insurance plans that has 35% approval rating. So, you know, I think that they should look to the popular plan, which is the House plan.
Well, all that, and we didn't even get to war. We've got a couple of them. The president got there just for a couple of paragraphs last night. But we will. They haven't gone away. It's great having you with us today, Pat Buchanan. I appreciate your joining us. Thanks for being here, sir.
Thank you, Tom.
Pat Buchanan's most recent book is Churchill, Hitler, and the Unnecessary War, and Jane Hampshire at FiredogLake.com. Jane, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks.
Jack Beatty, heartened a little bit, or I don't know, just staring straight ahead.
I'm heartened a little bit. I thought that the president spoke what the public feels, frustrated with this system.
Jack, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.